You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Mahomes over the middle, pass caught, Kelce, touchdown. He's got another touchdown. Kelce looking for his third. He found it, touchdown, end zone. He's got another. Four on the night. Carr, Adams, downfield. He's got it, touchdown, Las Vegas. They hand to Jacobs, and he, no signal, they didn't get it. And the Chiefs still lead by one. Carr. Receiver falls down. There are no flags. And the Chiefs will take over and win this game.
If you're a Raiders fan, sometimes you gotta laugh just to stop from crying. Hunter Renfro and Devontae Adams run into each other on the final offensive play for the Raiders of the game. It was fourth and one. The Chiefs come away with a victory. 30-29. I'm Greg Rosenthal. I'm here in the NFL media newsroom annoying the hell out of people still working here tonight, but our studio isn't working, and I'm glad joining me remotely, Steve Palazzolo from PFF, the host of the PFF podcast, and the tallest man I know. Steve, welcome to the show. We got a good game to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Appreciate it, Greg. Always look, you're like a legend on our podcast. So always good to
I wish you did. You did throw my name out there a couple of times just in terms of my Geno love. I guess the Geno thing's been great for the brand. I also pointed out before this week that Travis Kelce would do something good this week. I was really out on a limb, and it happened in this game. Four touchdowns. You're on the East Coast, Steve. So, you know, you're in Cincinnati, which is a special place for here on the podcast. So I don't want to keep you up too late. Let's get to it. Let's start at the end with that last sequence of plays for the Raiders. They get the ball back with a little over 2 minutes to go, down by 1 point. I think around the 10-yard line, all they need is to set up a field goal to go win. They get into a third and one situation, still with plenty of time. Incomplete to Devontae Adams. He can't get his feet in bounds before he brings the ball in, really on him. And then fourth and one, like, what did you think of that ending sequence? What did you think of the play calls? Like, what are you thinking, Steve?
I don't know how you guys record like right after a game, because I need to digest especially this type of game. But I thought when they went under center, I was thinking quick QB. They had no timeouts. I was thinking quick QB sneak and then run up and spike it, maybe run up, you know, grab a play. Because you're really only looking for 10 to 15 yards. And then the Raiders, I mean, they pulled out the first play. With their first fourth and one play, they say, hey, it worked in the first quarter. Let's do it here. And let's go for the whole thing. They didn't need to hit a home run, but they went for it. That part's risky. I mean, you, especially with Daniel Carlson. Like, if you're the Chiefs, with your uneven kicker situation, I think you're playing it differently. But with the way Carlson's kicking the ball, man, I don't know. I would have just tried to pick up that first down. But, hey, I like the Raiders' aggressiveness overall in this game.
I liked them, and them being aggressive, you're absolutely right, we'll get to that, is one of the reasons they were in this game. And I liked being aggressive on third and one. You know, I'm watching the game thinking, oh, this is a great spot. They just set up a second and one after a nice throw to Renfro. At that point, there's 51 seconds left, and that's a nice play to take a shot. You might get more favorable coverage on that third down, and they did. Davante Adams smokes his receiver. Carr gives him a beautiful ball, and that's what's the killer thing. Sometimes it's like, as a fan or as just an analyst, you like want someone to blame, but it's stupid. I mean, it was a perfect play call. Adams makes that catch cleanly on the sidelines most of the time, and they would have been in field goal range right there. But when you get to fourth and one, to me, we've seen this all over the NFL, and Andy Reid does it successfully. It's like no one wants to run on fourth and one, but this was a great Josh Jacobs game, and I was just hoping, you know, just they haven't stopped Josh Jacobs all night. Hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs, get the first down, and then on your way, you still have about 40 seconds to go.
They did have enough time to run the ball, and I really think every team – We saw the Eagles, you know, with the million QB sneaks. We've seen Jacoby Brissett become a QB sneak specialist when he's the backup and just as much as a starter. I think every team should have the QB sneak package. And then a lot of what the Patriots have done through the years where it's like, all right, if they do stack the A gaps, you get that little outside zone run where you're just outgapping. Like, you should be able to outgap the defense with a QB sneak, run left, run right on every single fourth and one. Now, fourth and, you know, a long one
even the
or
third
two.
And one, you could have done a hurry up. The Eagles did a great job doing that on Sunday.
Yeah, look, I mean, I joke that, like, you could just call better plays. It's easy when we're sitting watching. But there are probably, like, is there going to be an advantage at some point in the NFL? If teams are going for it on fourth down this much, can some teams just be better in those situations? Will they just always, can they find a schematic advantage? Can they find something that will raise them? Because we always talk about the percentages of if you go for it and what's going to happen if you get it or if you don't. But what if you can increase your odds just a little bit when you go for it? And I think that's what, I don't know if there's an edge there. It's kind of like, let's be good in the red zone, right? It's like,
well, yeah,
it's more of a prayer.
Let's be good at running the ball, basically. Right? And I think a lot of teams are doing that this year. The teams that are finding advantages. It was such a heartbreaking way to lose, though, because to back up a minute, that the Raiders had a 17-0 lead in this game. They give it up. They go for a two-point conversion down 24 or down 30-29 with 4:27 to go, a decision I really liked for a lot of reasons. They didn't get it, so they're down 1 point, but they actually get the ball back. And I just, the way this Raiders season has gone with some brutal losses. All four of their losses have been close. The Cardinals loss and this loss were crazy. It just felt sometimes like you got to know what you're good at. And man, they've really, I think, developed already into a pretty good run blocking team. Despite having a ragtag group of blockers, they were putting six offensive linemen on the field tonight, and they were running the ball really well. Josh Jacobs ends up with 154 on the ground, 39 through the air. He's awesome. And they went away from him at the last second, and they don't get that win in Arrowhead that just felt like it was there. Like, this is their white whale, is beating Patrick Mahomes if you're Derek Carr, and now he's lost 8 of 9 career games to him.
I mean, isn't it, you just need everything to go right to beat the Chiefs. I mean, you look at the start that the Raiders had, being up 17-0, like you said, it felt like Josh McDaniels dusted off the 2018 AFC Championship. It was a different team, but it was against the Chiefs, right? Having a fullback, running power, running play action off of
same
that.
Same dude, Jakob Johnson, running.
Yeah,
plays.
You've got the same fullback, like same idea, except you just threw an extra offensive lineman in there. And again, you've got that early aggressiveness. They go for it on fourth and one, hit the bomb to Davante Adams for a 58-yarder. But everything has to go right against the Chiefs. You go from, hey, we're running the ball, we're hitting some big plays, we're rushing the Mahomes and pressuring him, and still didn't matter. They still find a way, the Chiefs, to you know, just adjust enough and just be special enough between Mahomes and Kelce and some of their other guys.
And they shorten the game too. Like, I never buy into the shorten the game thing unless you're really,
unless it works.
Well, unless you're really inferior, and it's sort of like a way that, like, if you don't have a lot of talent, I like the idea of having Don Martindale as your defensive coordinator, because you're almost like a college team trying to scheme above your talent level. Shortening the game is sort of a different way to do that. But even though they shortened this game, there was only about 8 or 9 possessions for each team. their defense stopped getting stops after the first three possessions. The Chiefs, until that final punt, went touchdown, field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. So, yes, you had shortened the game, but the Chiefs still ended up with way more plays, and they still ended up with 30 points despite having only 8 or 9 possessions. And that's why the next thing I want to ask is just like kind of where you see Mahomes in this offense right now, because there was a period of this game where he felt like he could do anything. He's really doing a good job moving outside the pocket when he needs to, staying inside it. He picked up rushing yards when he moved it. It seems like the game is moving very slow for him. And at a certain point in this game, it felt like he could do just about anything and that they weren't going to get any more stops. And that felt like last week. It felt like week 1. It felt like the Chiefs of 2018 to 2020.
Yeah, I mean, the big question coming into the season was how much are they going to miss Tyreek Hill? Because we've seen, I mean, Tyreek Hill is still a special player, but one of the questions on top of that was it going to change the way Mahomes played? Was he going to rely less on the two guys? And we see that, right? It's Valdez, one drive, it's Valdez-Scantling, you see Juju, you see Mecole Hardman, and Kelsey's obviously the guy at all points. You know, like Aikman was saying, whether it's zone, whether it's man, it doesn't really matter. Like, that guy can get open. There was a point where the Raiders, not in the red zone, mind you, but there was a point in the Raiders on 3rd and 15, put two guys on Travis Kelce. 3rd and 15, they got Cleveland Farrell trying to press him at the line with another defender there. Of course, it's illegal hands to the face. So, yeah
that's
I mean,
a great play to point out. Not only did they have to penalize Kelce to take him out of the play, but they hit that 3rd and 15 with like,
and they hit it.
Was that the ridiculous? Was that a kind of the sidearm up the middle? I'm yes. Losing track of the ridiculous Mahomes plays in this game. But that was the thing. Even when they would get sacks and penalties against them, they were getting out of the long yardage situations, which is very Chiefs-y.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Raiders fan, or anytime you're going up against Mahomes, it's like you're looking for any kind of win. Oh, you finally got a sack. I mean, there's nobody in the NFL better at avoiding sacks than Patrick Mahomes. Now, he invites pressure himself, but he knows how to maneuver the pocket. He knows how to get out of the pocket. I think the way you described it was great. Anytime an edge defender will stunt, he'll get outside the pocket, right? He's just got such good feel, spatial awareness, which and I like the fact that he's spreading the ball around, and he's not just, it's not a three-man game anymore. There's Kelce, who's your go-to, but you got these other guys. Mahomes doing a great job throwing the ball accurately, and he was unstoppable in the middle of that game.
I mean, Kelce had the fourth fewest yardage in this game. He had a truly amazing stat line: 7 catches, 25 yards, 4 touchdowns.
4 touchdowns.
2 of those were 1-yard touchdowns. This was the Bubba Franks special. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Bubba Franks.
I remember Bubba.
Like, there was a time in fantasy football where Bubba Franks would get drafted maybe 9th, even though you knew he wasn't going over 200 yards on the season, because 200 yards and like 8 touchdowns was good enough for yes. to be the 9th best tight end in like 2006.
I don't want to hijack it with fantasy talk, but I did have Josh Jacobs, Travis Kelce, and Devontae Adams tonight. Ooh. I wasn't even watching the score. I was like, oh, I'm down like 50 going into the game. I ended up winning by 60 or whatever it was. So, hey, big game for all those guys.
That's a good job by you. I think you should mention it. I mentioned on the podcast, we'll get to that a little later, that I expected something special out of Travis Kelce. Was so on a limb. I do want to mention for listeners, because I think Dan's mentioned it on the show, and we're going to get down to breaking down this game a little more. This game, sometimes on these Monday nights, there's only so much to talk about. I could talk about this game for a long time. But I do want to point out, right now we have the biggest gap in height in terms of an NFL podcast in history. You were listed on your baseball reference page, and so I'm going by the facts. I don't know if this is right. At 6'10", you were a minor league relief pitcher. Made it up to triple A. I'm 5'6" if you round up. I know your co-host on PFF says, like, everyone thinks he's like this little midget because he's always next to you. And when he says that, it hurts my feelings because I am that little midget. You know, I really am that short. So the two of us together would be unstoppable, I think.
Yeah, we got to do these. We got to get in person here at the combine and really, you know, really make the record official for sure. Yeah, I am listed at 6'10". So that's
isn't it annoying to you that just like it doesn't help you at all in this format? That it's a great equalizer. Like, your height is doing nothing for you right now.
Just sitting here on my chair, you know.
No, you're the one. Like, this isn't even your job. You're up at midnight right now, helping me out. What did you think of the Andy Reid punt? 4th and 3. 3 minutes to go, I believe. I'm going to get the exact time right here. It was fourth and three. They had just set up a second and three. Felt like the game was about to end, Steve.
Yes.
The Raiders take their second timeout. At that point, it's 2:40. The Raiders hadn't had a stop in forever. Andy Reid, being the genius that he is, like breaks out his Sky Moore package with the game on the line. Like out of nowhere, he just has different Sky Moore swing passes that are working like a charm to get 8 yards at a time. Edwards-Alaire is running the ball well. They basically need 3 yards, and the game is almost over. But Devon Diablo makes a great tackle on second down, and then they go for a deep shot to Mecole Hardman, which hasn't worked all season. Hardman never seems to run the right routes. I like to blame him, not Mahomes. and they, at that point, have 2 minutes and 36 seconds left at the Vegas 46. So we've seen a lot of aggressive fourth down calls lately. Andy Reid chooses to punt there. What did you think?
I didn't hate the punt on fourth and three. I saw some model. I don't know what the PFF model would have had. I don't have it up during the game. I'm not that into it. But I saw some models that had like a strong, strong go for the Chiefs. I don't know if it's that strong. But look, the models basically factor in how easy it is to move the ball 30 or 40 yards in today's NFL. Now, maybe this year offense is down a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit more difficult, but it factors in being able to move the ball. So that's why.
Well, it's funny. They actually got back to that exact yard line. That's where they stopped, was the 46. They got back there with 51 seconds to go, which is not really a trade-off you would want if you're a Chiefs fan.
No, you wouldn't. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like nobody, I know Brandon Staley went for it yesterday and it was fourth and 1.5 to whatever it was. I'm intrigued by that, though, right? You are one play away from winning. This was the New England Patriots 2009, Bill Belichick against Peyton Manning. And the explanation was we're afraid of Peyton Manning, right? We haven't stopped him all day. But I really think there's something attractive about being one play away from victory, right? Like, I think people underrate being one play away from the win versus 10 to 15 plays to, you know, to seal the win.
Yeah, and it wasn't surprising either, because as aggressive as Andy Reid is and coming up with all these plays in the red zone, and they did a great job. Like, sometimes I just want them to run the ball up the middle on a one-yard run, because that's a percentage play too, and you should you need to be good at that at some point in the NFL season. And yet tonight they absolutely refused to, and they made the right call every time. They, like, had a wide-open receiver. So it's hard to really blame Andy Reid. But fundamentally, he's kind of conservative. He's still an old-school coach, even though he's aggressive in terms of his play calls. It didn't surprise me that he punted there, and it didn't surprise me that the Raiders got back in position. Devontae Adams ends up with a weird stat line too. 3 for 124, 2 touchdowns, and he drew 2 long pass interferences. Steve Spagnuolo, like, came out aggressive. It was not working. But when it came down to it, Steve, on that final fourth down play, I kind of, this is the thing I love about Spags, is like, how many rushers did he send there? It was at least 6. It might have been 7. So impressive. I don't know, like, if a run up the middle would have worked there either. There was a lot of bodies coming. Like, if you had, like it sounds great, yeah, run it up the middle, like a toss to the left would have maybe won the Madden play, and you end up running 30 yards down the sideline. But, like, this isn't Madden. You don't get to find out what the call is ahead of time. But that was very Andy Reid all night and very Steve Spagnuolo.
Yeah, I don't know if it was – I don't know if he was trying to blitz, you know, for the pass. I really think it looked like guys were creeping to take away the QB sneak, to take away the, you know, Josh Jacobs right up the middle. But yeah, they were aggressive, and the Raiders were aggressive back. And it, you know, makes for, it was kind of a anticlimactic ending. It's just like, Hunter Renfrow runs into Devontae.
I know, it's embarrassing. It was such an anticlimactic ending to one of the best games of the year. I think this was a really exciting game. It had a little bit of everything, including controversy. Let's get to the Chris Jones call. I know everyone is fired up about that. I get it. Chris Jones called for a roughing the passer on a play that he forced a fumble. Did something I've never really seen, in that, you know, he knocked the ball out and then possessed the ball almost simultaneously. He didn't take the ball. It just sort of bounced, you know, he just immediately was in his possession. And before he even landed on Mahomes, he had the ball, and they called roughing the passer. And I think it was full body weight on the quarterback was the explanation. Of course, he was sacking Derek Carr, not Mahomes. That ends up giving the ball, or allowing the Raiders to keep the ball. They end up getting a field goal out of the situation, and people lost their minds. Like, bad calls are going to happen. There's been a few of these. This wasn't as bad as the Tom Brady call on Sunday, but it was close. Like, what do you think realistically we can do here, I guess would be my question.
There's, you have somebody in their ear. I mean, there is someone in their ear, and there's enough time for them to review that. Like, there was enough time yesterday to say Tom Brady was not maliciously thrown to the ground. He was tackled. I mean, he was tackled the same way Tua was tackled, the same way Mahomes was tackled tonight. Same way. The
same Jones way Carr was, I mean, it was in a different way, but that was, it was a clean play by Jones. It didn't even feel like the body weight thing because he put his arm down and what else can you do?
And I don't even know how defenders, like how do you, you know, change the laws of gravity, like when you're tackling someone to roll off of them. They're being taught to try to like roll off.
They're actually doing a pretty good job. You know, thing is they actually have learned to pretty much avoid those types of plays. But it was like the angle that the ref saw it. I think if he saw it from a different angle, he wouldn't have called it, and it was just a bad call.
That was the old Tony Siragusa play against Rich Gannon, right? Like Siragusa just went like full body splash on Rich Gannon in the AFC Championship and knocked him out, and the Ravens go to the Super Bowl. But in this one, it's like Jones is, like you're saying, in the middle of stripping the ball. He puts his other hand down, and yeah, some weight went on Derek Carr. Like that was inevitable because he stripped it. That was one of the best defensive plays of the year. And it would have, I mean, look, the Chiefs ended up winning anyway. It was in the middle of turning things around for the Chiefs, but it was an incredible play. And pretty bad call.
Yeah, if Chris Jones had been on the wrong side of two of the most insane calls of the year that cost the Chiefs their two losses, that would have been interesting. I don't know if it was a ball don't lie situation, but the Raiders, you know, ended up kicking the field goal there. They got a little conservative a couple times. They kicked a field goal on a 4th-and-1. They also set up a field goal with like a draw on 3rd-and-8 at one point. After being aggressive, they were almost playing for 3, which I didn't love. And the Chiefs got a quick 3 back despite only having 30 or 40 seconds, which ended up being a big sequence. And I'm on Twitter. I'm doing this Channel 5 coverage in the UK for Monday Night Football. And I see how just people are mad because it's like, it's no longer football anymore. That's what Tony Dungy said. And Troy Aikman's making like take off the dresses and stuff. And I get that. And the emphasis is there to protect the quarterbacks. I just think if there's someone in someone's ear to change these calls on the field in terms of in or out of bounds that quickly, and they're doing it a lot, they're doing it a lot more than they even announced. Like, why can't you just do that? Those calls? I just feel like that's the next step.
Because
they're
going to
keep making mistakes. It's an the people get so mad at the refs. After watching a couple games on the sidelines, I'm amazed any call is ever
so fast.
It's impossible.
People don't realize how like high school games look fast to me. NFL games are so fast. It is so difficult
to make
those calls.
Patrick Mahomes makes 3 or 4 major errors in every game, and he's the best at what he did. Like, the refs are going to mess up calls, especially these calls, what they're being asked to do. So it's like, how can we fix that? I don't know.
If the ref throws a flag, I think I saw something, and somebody's just in his ear, and like, I would do it for everything. Like, is that a pick play? The number of times that Chris Jones got held on a call later, pretty blatant hold. There's a pick play. Like, pick plays are just a guessing game. Did you run a route? Did you fake it enough? Did you act enough? Oh, this is a pick. This isn't a pick. And then the roughing the passer. I mean, if they just throw the flag, I think I saw it. Wait 10 seconds. No. Can't really do much about that. All right. Pick the flag. Right. People aren't going to be that upset.
They're going to say it's a Pandora's box and look at what happened with the pass interference a couple years ago and you don't want to delay the game. And I guess I would say, though, they have the spotters there now at the game. They have the extra official up in the booth. They're pretty quick on some of these, and I don't know how you break it down, but I think they can figure it out. But in the meantime, like, everyone just take a deep breath because this is going to keep happening. Like,
good entertaining game. But look, the big picture thing is we're also a week removed from the Tua concussion thing, and if you're gonna err on the side of caution because of, you know, head injuries, that's, I don't know. Is that the worst thing in the world?
Have a problem with them not letting Teddy Bridgewater back into the game, even though no one actually had a video of what happened. Someone saw what happened, and we've seen the players can convince themselves back into the game. This was a very different situation, and I think roughing the passer is a very difficult one to to call, because even that Tom Brady call, which was terrible, you can see in live speed how someone would make a mistake. And that's all. That's my only point is, like, mistakes will happen.
Sure.
There was also a crazy penalty on the Chiefs. Chiefs had a missed field goal attempt. We never got a good replay of that. They usually don't get those calls wrong, but it was a holding on special teams that led directly to 7 points. Like, there was
on
a lot
fourth
going
and
on
like
here.
14 or whatever. That drives me nuts in general. Like the 5 yard penalty. That's the automatic first down. I know it's the rule defensive hold. I get why they have it, but defensive hold on a field goal. Like that was a game changer too.
That was a total game changer because the Chiefs kicker, what was his name? Matthew Wright, had a wild up and down game, missed a couple field goals, including that one that got pulled off the board, but also made a 59-yarder, which is pretty amazing at the buzzer. This game had a little bit of everything, and I really feel for you, Raiders Nation. You are the best 1-4 team in the league. I mean, I'm giving you that.
They're like comparable to the Giants, who are 4-1. You're not what your record was. I don't care what Bill Parcells says. You are not what your record says.
No, I think the Raiders have shown progress. I don't have like a lot of love for their defense, but they do have, you know, one of the three or four best edge rushers in the league, Max Crosby, who had another monster game. Chandler Jones is getting better. He's at least made an impact the last couple of weeks. I think they're close. There's so little difference between them and most of the 3-2 teams out there, and they have a easier part of the schedule coming up, but this was a heartbreaker because they could have gone into their bye at 2-3, which would have felt more fair, but life's
especially
not
with
fair
the win.
Steve,
yeah, especially with the win over the Chiefs. I don't know how much it takes for Derek Carr adjusting to the new system. Josh McDaniels runs completely different stuff from John Gruden, completely different terminology. We might be underrating the adjustment period maybe for Carr.
I think it's, you can see it. I mentioned with the offensive line, this is a bad looking offensive line on paper, but they've gotten that Patriots running game going the last couple of weeks. And Josh Jacobs is an incredible player right now, making people miss. It's coming along. It's coming. I think Derek Carr looked more comfortable this week too. Overall it's coming along, but they're 1-4. Football's not fair. Genetics aren't fair. You know, you got 6'10". You know how good I don't know. 6'10 might be too tall for tennis. Tennis was my thing. Actually, 6'10 is way too tall for tennis. You want to be 6'1. Like a ridiculous percentage of the greatest male tennis players of all time are between 6'0 and 6'2. It's like you don't want to be taller than that. You don't want to be shorter.
Yeah. That was like, I wanted to be a major league shortstop. And then before you know it, I was way too tall for that. So I was like, I guess I'll pitch.
Well, I was, a member of the Shield softball team championship of 2017. So got some bona fides too.
It's impressive.
It was huge. Thank you for coming, Steve. You do a great job. I love the PFF podcast. They make our recap show look like, like a episode of The Office or something. Like your show goes, 2.5 hours sometimes? Like
we go about 2.5 hours on a Monday morning. I feel like we leave a little bit. There's always a one fan base is like, you didn't talk about my team. And I'm like,
no, you don't leave that much on the bone. You and Sam, you eat that bone, but you
tangents.
Do a great job.
A lot of tangents.
And you guys are great in terms of draft coverage too. I really love you guys during draft season. Not that you aren't great all season long, but people should check out the PFF podcast. Steve, doing great work over there. And you're like, I don't even know what you do. You're like an executive too. And then you're just like, you're like Andrew Hawkins, who just, you know, like
little
sprinkles in being the on-air talent, but your actual job is being an executive. So you're a smart one. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Greg.
Go to bed. Thanks for staying up with me. I'm going to finish this show off. See you later, Steve, with a top six tight end list. And I'm going to welcome in Gravedigger. First, I want Justin, for you to play the clip of like one of the boldest takes I've ever had on this podcast. This came on the Friday Fun Show. Everyone should be listening to this every week. All right, my prediction is just that Travis Kelce wrecks shop against the Raiders. It's like all these other tight end come along lately. Darren Waller is going to be the future. Oh, Kyle Pitts is going to be the future. Oh, like here's this guy. Who's still the best tight end in the freaking NFL? It's Travis Kelce. He's on pace to have one of his very best seasons ever. Travis Kelce. He's still got the championship.
Wait, what is that? But what's your prediction? Because I'm seeing
this was hero of the week. He's the hero. All right. My prediction is just that Travis Kelce
Rex Shop against the Raiders. It's like all these other tight end come along lately.
This. Oh, please, Darren Waller. Please, I can't listen to myself anymore. That was so long. You didn't help me out, Graver, because you just put along the bottom, Travis Kelce will be good. Well, you know what? I don't care. Maybe that sounded safe, but whatever. Travis Kelce did something memorable tonight. He scored 4 touchdowns.
I think you get full credit for that. That was an excellent prediction.
You know, part of it was I was thinking, maybe I'm going to set up this Monday night pod. I'm going to finish every Monday night pod. Now that we're back here in the States, got my jet lag is gone, with a top 6 list to wrap up every Monday night football recap. And I thought tonight with Travis Kelce and Darren Waller playing, we're going to do my top 6 tight ends in the NFL right now. This is like a power ranking. This is like the tight end index. Maybe that'll be my new IP. You know, so it's just about where they are right now. It's not historically. It's who's the best tight ends in the league right now. So Darren Waller, you're not making it. You've had a sloppy year. He left today with a hamstring injury after about 7 snaps. Doesn't have a lot of production. Normally, he would be on this list. There's some other injured players that aren't going to make it. Number 6, I'm throwing Taysom Hill because he qualifies there in fantasy leagues. So I don't know really what he is, but just Taysom Hill has made a massive difference on the Saints, and it's a thin season right now among tight ends. I thought about Gerald Everett for this last spot, who's actually playing really well. Number 5, I am giving George Kittle a little bit of like historical love. I know he's had a slow start to the year coming off an injury. Did lead the 49ers in targets and catches. So he gets kind of grandfathered in at number 5 just because he's George Kittle. Number 4, David Njoku. What a weird contract that was, Graver, in the offseason. People are like, you're paying David Njoku that money. And now look at David Njoku making plays each and every week. And he has the reputation as a great blocker. I went to PFF to check his blocking score. It's fantastic. Right now you can make the case Njoku is the most complete tight end in the NFL. How about that?
Wow. And he's probably Cleveland's second best receiver right now. So
he's making big plays each week. Number 3 is Dallas Goedert. Always been underrated. Dallas Goedert is averaging over 10 yards after the catch per catch. That's ridiculous. I was like, is that a thing? I know it's a lot of tight end screens, but like Travis Kelce, he is very good in terms of weaving in between defenders, knocking people over, always getting some extra yards, really good hands, really good in the red zone. He's gotten better every season of his career. I've always liked Dallas Goedert. Now he's on pace to go over 1,000 yards. He's incredible. He's still a tick behind Mark Andrews, who's the man, who I think is kind of the Jenga piece other than Lamar Jackson on the Ravens offense. If they ever lost Mark Andrews, they would be in huge trouble. He's producing again. He'll have a drop or two, but he'll also have incredible catches. And so you'll take the drops. He's number 2. And then number 1, still Kelce. I mean, I knew it coming into tonight. I feel the same way right now. He not only are his hands good, and he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, I believe, and his yards after the catch on that like 8-yard touchdown, he's so good at just having people bounce off him. But he understands leverage and zone defenses. And him and Mahomes just improvise in a way that even Gronk and Tom Brady never could, because they weren't about that improvisational life. They were about reading the coverage the same. Like that Kelce touchdown where he ran across and ended up beating those tackles. It's like, that was not the play call. He runs across, knocks a dude over. They lock eyes, and they always just like figure out it. Like when they play football, it's like jazz music. Justin Graver. That's why he's number 1.
And he's not just good at weaving with like his eyes and his vision, but he's hard to bring down. He was stiff. He stiff armed 2 Raiders to the turf on that touchdown.
And people are like, it's like, oh well, he's not that much of a blocker. He's fine. He gets the job done. The variety with which they use him and sometimes put him in line is enough. He gets in the way, and the way they use all their tight ends are great. And there was a moment last year I thought he was maybe starting to get a little older, and that moment has passed. He looks incredible this year, and their offense is going to be just fine without Tyreek Hill. 30-29. Man, this was a long one, but it was a great game. I feel for the Raiders, though. I was pulling for them at the end. Like, yeah. I usually just pull for Mahomes, and by the end of that, you're just like, give the Raiders a little bone.
Tough loss there.
All right, Justin. We'll be back on Tuesday with Dan and Mark. We're going to talk a little frisky. We're going to talk a little spicy. Until then, go ahead and heed the call. See you Tuesday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.